face!
Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
It's gotta be a dream.
Hey, 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 it's Monty. Welcome to the Rockcast.
This is idiotic.
Thanks so much for listening, and if this is the first time you've ever heard my podcast, well, you picked a really good time to do it. Because on this episode, I'm going to do things a little bit different than the way I usually do them. Today, I've decided that I'm going to take the Ted Nugent double live gonzo approach and throw out all the rules.
It's a free-for-all!
There's not going to be any, quote, segments, no rules, no structure. I'm just going to go for it. And I will just basically do what I wanna when I wanna do it.
Stop! That's crazy!
Yes, I know it sounds insane, but it's that type of unpredictability that makes this show the best podcast on the internet.
It's always the same.
So let's get this spontaneous episode going with something completely random. How about an email from Jim Youngs? And he says about the last episode, another phenomenal rock cast, Monty. Three things struck me. Number one, you said you like old Genesis. You've been ripping on us prog nerds pretty good here lately. But those guys invented melodic prog. I love Genesis and Gabriel and Hackett and never heard you give them much of a shout out before. But I do remember you saying you liked Mike Rutherford's first solo album, I think. Well, Jim, here's where I stand with all the Genesis stuff. I like some of the Peter Gabriel era, but I didn't really get into Genesis until after he left. And there was this period in the late 70s when they put out Then There Were Three and Seconds Out. And Phil Collins had taken over on vocals, but they hadn't completely cheesed out yet. And I got to see them live during that period, and they did a bunch of stuff from the early albums, and Chester Thompson was on drums, but no Steve Hackett. He had left by that point also, and so I went and checked out Steve Hackett's solo stuff, and I love that. And if you prog nerds don't have an album by Mike Rutherford called Small Creeps Day, you gotta get it. He used a great vocalist on there named Noel McCalla, and Simon Phillips was on drums, and the songs were just awesome.
And I feel like the night is closing in. I know it is. Do you feel it burning in my blood? Burning in my blood. Life is setting me on fire. And I feel like the cloud is closing in. I know.
Now, the second comment that Jim had about my last show is that it strikes him that all the hardcore screamo stuff that I play seems to be my favorite genre right now. And he says, hey, Monty, have you ever just tuned down your guitar real low and written a pile of hardcore songs? You could pump out 10 of those in a day if you wanted. Good question, Jim. Let's see. Tuned down real low and written a bunch of hardcore songs. Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's going to be called the next GC album. Ha! But seriously, you're right, Jim. I do like that metalcore stuff a lot. And honestly, one reason is because it reminds me of some of that stuff that Galactic Cowboys was doing on our first two or three albums. We had stuff like Sea of Tranquility and If I Were a Killer that had real heavy riffs, and yet you'd get this melodic payoff. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Back in 91, before there was any Killswitch or any of those other metalcore bands, there was Galactic Cowboys.
Oh, please.
All right. The third comment that Jim Youngs had about my last episode was concerning the top bass players list that I read. And he says, I was thinking about John Myung from Dream Theater, and yeah, he can play a crap load of notes in a short period of time, but in my opinion, he has one of the worst bass tones ever.
Stop right there. That's way out of line.
Wow, Jim. Well, that is a bold statement, my friend. I mean, you're talking about one of the best bass players of all time. You're talking about a guy who is in one of the greatest prog bands of all time. And it takes a lot of guts on your part to criticize his bass tone.
The nerve!
But all that said, yeah, I kind of know what you're saying.
Huh?
Back when we were on tour with Dream Theater, we'd go on stage every night and do the background vocals to Take the Time. And while we weren't singing, sometimes I'd go back and stand by his cabinets. And it'd just be kind of this low-end rumble kind of thing, and I was just like, wow, I don't know how he plays with that tone. It's kind of the opposite of mine, where you got all this bright, high-end distortion. But whatever, I mean, he was in the top 10, and I wasn't on the list at all.
Loser! You're a loser!
Now, I also heard from a lot of you who liked some of the music I played on the last episode, including Chad Jones, who said, hey, Monty, thanks for making me aware of Fire from the Gods. I downloaded their album as soon as I was done listening to the podcast, and it is awesome. Well, I'm glad you like that CD, Chad, because I do too. It's one of the best albums I've heard all year, and coincidentally, I got to see them the other night.
This is a very, very big story.
A few months ago, I heard that this band We Came as Romans was coming to a little bitty club here in Kansas City. It's called Aftershock, and it only holds a few hundred people, and I thought, man, that would be great to see a killer band like We Came as Romans in a small place like that, so Lindsay and I got tickets. Well, about a week before the show, I look online to see who's opening for We Came as Romans, and of all things, it says Fire from the Gods. So I was totally stoked to see them, and so we got there around 7:30. But of course, it doesn't matter who's headlining. All these local clubs always put about three or four local bands on before them. And I don't want to knock local bands because, you know, you got to start somewhere. And I'm glad these clubs give them a chance to play. But generally, they just end up being high school kids who are just trying to follow the latest trends. And they have no originality and no clue, really. And you know how it is, when you see a really good band, you're just like, yeah, they get it. And so we sat there for a couple of hours watching local bands who weren't very good until it was time for Fire from the Gods. And when they came on, it was obvious, they get it, they know how it's done. But of course, there always has to be one of these stupid circle pits. And there weren't really that many people there. I was really kind of surprised. So when all those guys start bashing into each other, I just grabbed Lindsay and we moved all the way up to the front rail. And we ended up literally inches from the guys on stage for the rest of the night. And from then on, I just had a wonderful concert experience. And part of it was fire from the gods. Yeah, I love that stuff, and if you don't have that album, do yourself a favor and check it out, Fire from the Gods.
All of it is Knock Your Socks Off hardcore.
Now, as I said before, the headliner of the evening was We Came as Romans, also known by most of you out there in the listening audience as one of those screamo bands where all their songs sound the same. And yeah, I get it, there's a million of those bands and they do mostly sound the same. But that's really kind of what happens no matter what the genre is. You get a bunch of bands, and they all try to sound like the good bands. Remember back when thrash metal was getting really popular? You had Anthrax, Megadeth, and Metallica leading the way. And then you had a ton of bands that started trying to sound like them. The same thing happened with Korn and Pantera, and it even happened with glam rock. And so I don't have a big problem with a lot of the copycat metalcore bands, but We Came as Romans is definitely one of the best. They've got excellent songs, and man, their stage show was amazing. So full of energy, they never stopped moving, and I lost my hearing for about the next 2 days. Lindsay and I just got totally pummeled by amps and speakers right in our face, and we loved it.
Built on lies. Throne of
So that's We Came as Romans. It was a great show. And if you're one of those guys in my audience that actually likes that kind of music, and I know there's some of you out there like that, such as, you know, Matt in St. Louis, Greg Skipton, Joseph Glenn, well, you might want to check out a couple of bands that I've discovered lately. One of them is called I Prevail. They've got a new CD out, and it sounds a little bit like this. Another band that you might find interesting is Famous Last Words. They're real intense and they remind me of Ice Nine Kills. But some really good hooks and great harmony vocals here and there and good stuff. So that was for a few of my metalcore fans, but for everyone else that hates that stuff, I'll make it up to you by playing you some Thin Lizzy.
Ooh!
I found a deluxe version of Renegade the other day, and it had a whole bunch of bonus tracks on it. So forgive me for being so indulgent and playing that screamo stuff. Here's a little Thin Lizzy for you old farts.
Thank you.
People out in Hollywood, they got a lot of class. You see the boys strutting down the boulevard, trying to make a pass. Not like in New York, it's high rise, it's concrete and complex. Not like in old London town, it rings down on its subjects. Nobody give a damn.
You got
So I know most of the people that listen to my show are into, rock and roll, metal, stuff like that. And I know a lot of you aren't into rap at all. And I'm not really either, and there's a lot of it that I downright hate. But there are a few things that I like Eminem, I like Hollywood Undead, and, this guy named Deuce. But for the most part, I'm just really not that into it. But the other day, I happened to catch this movie straight out of Compton. And it was about the rap group N.W.A., which, if you don't know, stands for Niggas With Attitude.
Say what?
What? That's their name.
Dude, you're so racist!
I mean, I didn't name them that. They called themselves Niggas With Attitude.
You are disgusting!
Anyway, the movie. I really loved it.
Racist!
Of course, Dr. Dre and Ice Cube are both in that group. And the actors they got to play the parts looked like the people that they were supposed to be playing. And it was a really interesting story, and I learned a lot about N.W.A. For instance, it seems like it's the same story over and over when it's something about bands. They start out as young guys eager to make it in the music industry, and they end up getting screwed over by managers and record companies, and I know how that is.
Yeah, you do.
So that was a good movie, but I've also been watching a show called Ink Master. And what it is a competition between tattoo artists. And I'm pretty sure I'm one of the few rock musicians who has never gotten a tattoo. But after watching this show, I'm almost positive I will never get one.
Why not?
These guys are all supposedly some of the best in the business, and yet about 50% of their tattoos are horrible. And I also don't think I'd ever want to meet any of these tattooers. Because if you go by this reality show, apparently all tattoo artists are assholes.
Could be.
Now, since I'm kind of on the subject of art, I got a question from Christian in Germany. And he says, "Hey, Monty, I was wondering if you're going to paint the cover for the upcoming Galactic Cowboys CD, or if you are involved in the creative process. If so, do you already have ideas in which direction the artwork will be?" Well, yeah, Christian, the label that we signed with so far has given us creative control over everything, including the artwork. And right now I have about 4 different pieces that I'm working on, and there will probably be more that I'll do. And hopefully from those we'll come up with 1 or 2 things that everyone will like. So yeah, between working on the artwork and writing songs and all that stuff, I've been staying really busy.
All right, enough on your stupid band.
Christian also said that he's a big Iron Maiden fan, and the other day he noticed the similarities between the album artwork of Somewhere in Time and our Galactic Cowboy album cover for At the End of the Day. And he wanted to know if the resemblance was just a coincidence or if I did that on purpose. Well, I know what you're saying, Christian, and I didn't even really realize it until, maybe a couple of years later when somebody actually mentioned that. And when I went back and looked, I went, oh, okay, I can see that. But how the one that I did came about was we were in the studio recording that album, and we started talking about concepts. And I asked the guys kind of what they were thinking or what they might want. And Alan was like, well, I remember this painting you did back in the 80s, and it was of New York City, like Times Square. And he said, how about you do something like that? And I said, okay, well, I could take the song titles and put them on billboards and take past Galactic Cowboy imagery and use that in there. And that's what I did, but I will admit it did come out looking a little bit like the Iron Maiden album cover, but it wasn't intentional.
No, see, he's lying. I mean, why do you always lie?
Anyway, did you guys have a good Halloween? I know I've said it before, but it's not really one of my favorite holidays. My wife and kids just love it, and they're all about it like all month long.
Oh!
Lindsay will have the whole house decorated, and she'll want to force me to carve a pumpkin.
Oh my God! God!
But I'm like, no, those things will be rotting on our doorstep about 3 days from now. And of course, I can never figure out a costume until about 20 minutes before we go trick-or-treating. So it's always just a waste of time and money for me and kind of a pain in the butt. But I gotta say, this year turned out to be a little different and a little more interesting for me because I got to help Lindsay pick out her costume. And I was kind of surprised because 2 days before Halloween, she still didn't know what she was going to be. And so I said, well, let me make a few suggestions. And so I said, well, let's just go shopping. And we go to the Halloween store and don't really find anything. And so I finally go, well, hey, why don't we go to one of those adult stores where they sell all the sex stuff? And I know, that sounds so terrible. But, you know, we are adults, we are married. And so we said, why not? And so I find a place on the internet that's not too far from us, and we drive over there, and we go walking in, and there is all things wrong and perverted. And they've just got all these hot outfits, costumes. And I look up on the wall, and I see it hanging there before me, a Catholic schoolgirl outfit.
Yeah! Woo!
Yeah, you know, the white shirt with the tie and the little plaid miniskirt.
Hell yeah!
Well, you never know what a woman's gonna say. I mean, she may go, I'm not wearing that. But Lindsay's just like, yeah, let me try it on.
Wow! Nice!
And so she goes back to the dressing room and puts it on, and when I finally see her, I say, yes, we must purchase this immediately.
Hot.
Because I gotta tell you, it's one thing for a woman to wear something like that, and it's another thing for her to rock the hell out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, she looked amazing, and I'm a very lucky guy, and it was a very good Halloween this year.
Okay, he's got a hot wife. Boring.
So Lindsay had an awesome costume for Halloween, but apparently there were some other costumes out there this year that were not nearly as acceptable.
Really?
You see, I got up the next morning and turned on the news, and there was a story about Hillary Duff. You remember her?
No.
Years ago, she had this kids show called, Lizzie McGuire or something like that.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Well, she's grown up now, and her boyfriend went out on Halloween dressed up as a pilgrim and an Indian.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, and people were just completely outraged, and they found this very offensive.
I am repulsed.
Well, of course, she immediately had to do the politically correct thing and apologize. And she told everyone how sorry she was for being so insensitive. So just keep that in mind for next Halloween. You're no longer allowed to dress up as an Indian, or a pilgrim for that matter. But especially not an Indian. And to be honest, I'm still puzzled by all this stuff. You've got all these liberals who are demanding that the Washington Redskins change their name. But at the same time, they don't really seem to have a problem with the Chiefs or the Braves. And it all made me think back to the 70s when the Marquette University basketball team won the national championship. And their name was the Warriors, and nobody thought anything about it. But a few years ago, somebody decided that the name Warriors was disrespectful to Native Americans. And they changed their name to something much less offensive, the Golden Eagles. But I'm like, how is Warriors disrespectful or offensive? It sounds strong and badass. I mean, I would have gotten it if their name would have been the Marquette Running Pussies. But no, it was the Warriors. What's wrong with that?
Racist!
And speaking of pussies, David Von Olerking was on Facebook again the other day talking shit on me. And in case you don't know who he is, Alan and I used to be in a band with him called The Awful Truth. And after we broke up, Alan and I went and started Galactic Cowboys, and one of the first songs I wrote was a song called Blind. And yes, I did have David in mind when I wrote it back in the 80s. But apparently after 25 plus years, every time David thinks about that song or hears it or anything, he goes on Facebook and wants to tell everybody what a horrible person I am. So I thought, hey, this is a good opportunity to talk about that song. So how about I just do a little bit of this? Monty's Total Breakdown.
How could I have been so blind all this time?
Okay, so I've never really talked that much about the awful truth on this show, so I thought I'd give you a little background. I think it was around 1987 when David, myself, and Alan Doss were all the backup band for a Christian artist named Morgan Cryer. And Morgan had a record deal, and he hired us to play his songs live. And we travel around the country in this van and play concerts. But literally after the first weekend, we'd played two shows. And on the way back, Morgan was ready to fire David already. And even though David was a really good guitar player, I'd say it was like a month maybe that he lasted. But Morgan cut him loose. So Alan and I went on and played with Morgan another year, but after we left, David gave me a call and said, "Hey, how would you like to play in my band, The Awful Truth?" And I wasn't doing anything at the time, so I thought, yeah, why not? It might be fun. Well, we ended up getting Alan in the band on drums, and we had Sam Taylor as our manager, and we were playing like every week. And at first we were just doing David's songs, but of course I was like, "Hey, I write too, how about we do some of my songs?" And so we added a couple like Higher and Drowning Man and stuff like that, but David didn't really seem to like them. I think he thought they were too heavy and he didn't like me playing with distortion on my bass all the time. So we definitely had our run-ins, but David could be a really nice guy, but there were times too when he was just a total dick. And as bad as things were between me and David, he could never get along with Sam at all. And so Sam ended up saying, "Hey, I'm resigning as your manager," even though we were really close to getting a record deal ourselves. But after Sam left, I said, "Hey, I'm going to give this a chance. We're really close to getting signed, so I'm going to see what happens." But instead of things getting better, they got worse. David didn't have a phone, and so I never knew how to get a hold of him. And when I did finally talk to him, he'd hang up on me. And to make a long story short, I just told Alan, "Listen, dude, I cannot deal with this guy anymore. And I know this is going to probably cost me my entire career, but I got to walk. And I don't know what I'll do next, but I'm gone." And so Alan said, "Well, yeah, I think I'll leave too. But if we do leave, do you want to start another band together?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, that'd be great." So Alan and I both quit The Awful Truth and started our own band called Galactic Cowboys. And about 6 months later, we were signed to a major record deal. As for David, the day after Alan and I quit, he had new people in his band. And I would say maybe less than a year later, those same people who were in his band were coming to me saying, "Oh, Monty, I understand now. We're selling our equipment and we're never going to play again." And a year or two later, I had a guy who tried to manage David come to me and say, "What is the deal with this guy?" And so I don't know, maybe it wasn't just me. But I was really resentful for a year or two after leaving The Awful Truth, and so I wrote the song Blind about David and kind of tried to get it all out of my system.
Teardrops of sorrow beating down upon my chest, from never knowing the true meaning of success. Genius and all the ways that you're perceived, but how could anyone be so utterly deceived? How could I have been so blind all this time? How could I?
There was a line in the bridge of this song where I said, "You tried to take me to an evil place." And that was actually something that I had heard David say about somebody else one time. And so that was just me being kind of a smartass.
You tried to take me to an evil place.
So, yeah, I was really pissed off and angry when I wrote Blind, but, you know, as the years went by, it just became a song. And now I don't even think about David when I hear it. I'm just like, yeah, cool harmonies, or yeah, I really like my bass tone on that song. I'm not still sitting around being angry. And I think it's been about 10 years ago now when one day I saw David Von Oehler King's name on Facebook. And I thought, you know, I'm going to send David a message and just tell him I'm sorry for the way all that crap went down back then. Because, you know, I was still in my 20s and I did and said some things that were stupid and I probably would handle things a lot differently now. And by no means was I taking all the blame for everything, but at the same time, we were probably both immature and I'm sorry for the way things turned out. And surprisingly, I heard back from David and he said, yeah, man, we're cool. And that was about all he said, but I thought, okay, great. But over the last 2 or 3 years, I've seen like 3 or 4 times where David will go on Facebook and talk about Alan and I being sellouts. And so I thought, well, okay, so he's still upset at me. But whatever, I didn't ever respond. It's not worth my time because I've got stuff to do, you know? I got a lot of stuff. But then the other day on Facebook, I see that Ben has posted some handwritten lyrics of mine for the song Blind. And it was literally the original notebook paper that I had written the song on. And I didn't even know Ben still had that, but there it was. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. But then here comes Von Oehler King talking crap on me again. And I won't read the whole thing, but he basically implies that he did all the work and the awful truth, and that Alan and I were a couple of lazy-ass band members. And he says when we quit the band that we already had another band already in place, which is not true. I didn't find Ben or Dane until weeks later. And he's also still upset that he didn't get to use his artwork for the cover. And I can understand that David's still upset about the way things went down. That's his prerogative. But when he called me lazy, that's where I draw the line. I wouldn't have even commented on his snarky little remarks. But you call me lazy, it's on. And by the way, I have a podcast, you dummy. You want to trash talk me? All right, here we go.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I was lazy, huh? Okay, well, let me tell you all about a typical day in the life of a guy in The Awful Truth. If we were just going to practice, well, if you're David, you don't leave your house. We practiced in his living room, so he didn't have to go anywhere. But I, on the other hand, had to drive an hour to get to his place. However, if we were going to play a gig, my day started about 11 o'clock in the morning. I would drive to a rental place where I would rent a van and then drive to David's. We'd then load all the equipment and then drive to the club. We'd then set up our stuff and wait around all night at the club until we played. Now, there was usually only just a couple of people who would come and see us. And we wouldn't go on sometimes until midnight, but regardless of how many people were there, I always gave it my 100%, jumping around, sweating my butt off, acting like a maniac effort. And then after the show, we'd hang out, talk to people, then load the gear back up and take off. We'd drive clear back out to David's house where we'd unload the gear, and then I would have to return the van to the rental place. After that, I would get back in my car, drive all the way back to my apartment, just in time to see the sunrise 6 o'clock the next morning. But apparently, since David made some cool-looking flyers that no one could ever read, that makes him the hardest working man in show business.
Well, yeah.
In fairness, actually, David did do a lot for The Awful Truth. He booked the gigs, and he also bought a lot of candles.
What?
Yeah, David liked to put candles all over the stage, and so I thought, well, whatever, that's his deal, okay. At least he's paying for it. But little did I know that I would also be paying for those candles later, along with all those flyers he was making.
Aha!
But it was always about David's vision, David's songs, and David's artwork. And he wanted to control everything and for it to be all about him. Unfortunately, I also had vision, I write songs, and I'm also a pretty good artist. And for him to continually tell me over and over that the awful truth will go on with or without me and Alan, it just wore a little thin after a while. And so I find it just a little bit pathetic that he's still whining about something that took place in 1988. Or was it 89? Hell, I don't remember. It's been way too long ago. And if it was all about him anyway, and he didn't need me and Alan, why didn't he do something after we left?
Well, I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because there's a lot more to being successful than just being talented. You gotta be able to coexist and get along with people once in a while.
That is the most profound thing I think I've ever heard you say, and you've said a lot of profound things.
But I'll tell you something else. I think David really undervalued Alan and I as a rhythm section. I mean, just the way he still refers to us as lazy-ass band members, not a lot of respect there. And I think he also really underestimated me. He thought I'd always take his crap and I'd never go anywhere if I left. But I did, and he's probably still bitter and jealous about it now. I don't know. I don't even care. I learned a lot from my experience in The Awful Truth. I grew from it, and then I moved on. And I wish David could too. Instead of going on Facebook almost 30 years later and acting like a whiny little bitch.
Whining, yeah, whining's bad.
But whatever, that's just a little background on the song Blind. When I hear it now, it doesn't really have that much meaning to me anymore, but I still think it's a pretty good tune. We were going to put it on the first album, but we decided to save it. And then we ended up re-recording the whole thing and putting it on Space in Your Face. And honestly, I'm glad we did, because it ended up sounding a lot better. But there you go, a total breakdown for you. It was a little different than the total breakdown that I almost had when I was in The Awful Truth, but nonetheless, a breakdown. Before I go, I wanted to read some more of your guys' emails. And I got quite a few comments about the top bass players list. And most of your thoughts were about who wasn't on the list. For instance, Chris in Baltimore said, no Tom Hamilton from Aerosmith. And yeah, I agree. Phil Robinson thought that Ian Hill from Judas Priest should have been on there, along with Robert DeLeo from Stone Temple Pilots. Rudy Sarzo, and Billy Gould from Faith No More. Yeah, I thought of him too. He would play with distortion at times, he was metal at times, he was funky at times. Really cool player. But Matt Corr in Canada sent me a whole top 10 list of bass players that weren't on the list. Starting at number 10 with Tim Gaines from Striper, number 9 Billy Greer from Kansas, number 8 is Dan McCabe from the Daniel Band. Number 7 is Victor Macias from Tourniquet. 6 is Omar Dumkus, I believe it is, from Sacred Few. And number 5 is Bill Brown from Dig Jesus. And yeah, Matt, I actually know Bill Brown. He's a friend of mine. Doesn't live too far from me, in fact. And Bill is a really good guy, and a strange story is that one day out of nowhere, he just comes up to me with this Fender P bass and says, here, I want you to have this. And I'm like, no way, dude, why? And he's just like, I just want to give it to you. And I still have that bass, even though everybody who's seen it since then wants to buy it off of me. But I'm like, nope, I'm hanging on to it. So if you ever see me playing a white Fender P bass, used to belong to Bill Brown.
I don't know who that is.
Anyway, continuing on with Matt's list, at number 4, it's Ez Gomer from Jet Circus. 3 is Felix Pappalardi from Mountain. Number 2 is Monty Colvin.
What?
Well, thanks, Matt. I appreciate that. And yeah, why wasn't I on the list?
People wouldn't know who you are if they bumped into you on the street.
But finally, at number 1 on Matt's list of bass players who weren't on the top bass players list, Dave Hope from Kansas. Well, good call, Matt. Dave Hope was indeed a great bass player, and his solo on Magnum Opus should have been enough to get him on the list, period. Alright, time now for a quick CD review. And Helmet has a new album out called Dead to the World. And you do get some of the usual stuff that you expect from Helmet, like the heavy riffs. But they also tried some different sounding things on here, which kind of surprised me. Like, some of the melodies are almost kind of poppy.
Every word you speak is worse than the truth. You're miserable. All news is bad news. All news is bad news. All news is bad news.
So yeah, that's some Helmet. I kind of like it.
Hated it.
But that's going to do it for my completely random episode of the Rockcast. Let me know what you thought of it.
I fell asleep.
All right. If you want to get a hold of me, you can do so on Facebook. And don't forget to check out my CDs, t-shirts, and paintings at montycolvin.net.
I'll admit, I've never heard of that website.
I'm going to play you out with another song off the new Helmet CD, but I will return soon with more fun and mayhem. But until then, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like unless it's me. And
rock on.
Nobody knows you. Been holding up the sky. Earth, moon, and tide.
Darling, I
This has been Monty's Rockcast.
The end.